A final flurry of lawmaking in Augusta. The legislative session is in its home stretch, and that means after months of crafting language, holding public hearings, and meeting for work sessions, legislators are taking action on all those bills. From hospital repayment to GMO labeling, concealed weapons, marijuana, and the state budget, the action is unfolding right now. Today on Maine Calling, we'll get an update on the 126th legislature with two experts. With me in our Augusta Bureau, MPBN State House Bureau Chief A.J. Higgins and Mal Leary, Managing Editor of Maine Capital Connection. We'll also hear from the Executive Director of the Maine Innkeepers Association and the Mayor of Lewiston and the Presque Isle City Manager about their concerns with the pending budget. Of course, we'd like to hear from you. What issues are important to you? Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call. 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. The latest on all the action at the State House. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN radio listener contributions and by the Maine Community Foundation, working with donors and other partners to strengthen Maine's economy and communities, on the web at mainecf.org. And by Katama Productions, dedicated to creating visual communications for on-air, online, and in-house video presentations. Learn more at katama.net.
And welcome to Maine Calling, live from Augusta. In addition to A.J. Higgins and Mal Leary, we're going to be joined by two legislative leaders from the Republicans, Representative Alex Ouellette, and with the Democrats, Representative Seth Berry. We'll be bringing them in one at a time because of a matter of a number of headphones and microphones we have here. So in the beginning, we're going to welcome Alex Ouellette to the Maine Calling program. And I would like the folks here in this room to start by just bringing us up to speed. Mal and AJ, what has happened in the past couple weeks? Mal, what do we know will be law and will not be law that we didn't know just a couple weeks ago?
There's a lot of stuff that has been passed through. I was looking on the governor's list of bills he signed. I think he signed like 40 yesterday. So we're seeing literally hundreds of bills moving through the process. You couldn't begin to start listing all of them. If you look at some of the big issues, they're still under consideration. We heard debate this morning on what's called constitutional carry. The House did it yesterday. The Senate today defeated that legislation. That has chewed up a lot of committee time. It's chewed up a lot of debate time. That issue's over for the session. Some of the big issues like expanding Medicaid, the state budget, all of those are still underway and being debated.
All right. And AJ, what do you want to add to that?
Well, we've also taken up a lot of other issues that, as usual during the legislative session, we push these issues that are the most contentious off to the end. It really serves, I think, psychologically, two factors. One, it sort of forces legislators to sort of deal with these tough issues in a more expeditious way, although we can have still considerable debate on issues that you might ordinarily think would not take that much time. But yesterday, we took up the issue of genetic modified organisms.
Whether to label foods with right. GMOs, yep.
And we also passed an amendment in the House that would make our participation in that process contingent to an agreement by a group of five other contiguous states, which puts Maine in a situation where, yeah, we're taking a position on it, but we're not sort of taking a Lone Ranger approach on it.
And in your view, is that the legislation, the way it will likely end up becoming law?
Received a real strong vote in the House. And I suspect that it will receive an equally strong vote in the Senate. The one, I guess, bugaboo, if you will, that has been sort of placed in the mix is that the deal is that we would buy into this with five other states, but they would have to be contiguous states, which means that our participation is completely dependent on whether New Hampshire agrees or not, and who knows what that state will do.
Well, we also know that
The legislature did not pass the marijuana legalization bill onto the voters. Now, that could go through the referendum process outside of the legislature, but that won't happen, right? And what's the latest on the energy bill?
The energy bill, that bill is being held up somewhat by the governor's office. It's received big votes in the House and the Senate, but the governor's objections have to do with a proposal by Stat Oil that they would put out generation units off the Maine coast in federal waters. And essentially, the governor is not particularly happy with that proposal. It's a test site. It would produce, I guess, only about 12 megawatts of electricity, and it would be funded by Maine taxpayers. He would prefer to make his approval of that bill contingent to a revisiting of that issue by the Public Utilities Commission. Democrats are saying, this is just an attempt by the governor to frustrate new technologies coming into Maine. Governor says, no, this would allow the University of Maine to participate on an equal footing and basically discourage what he thinks is a bad deal for Maine taxpayers.
Okay, so that's not complete yet. I want to bring Alex Ouellette into the discussion. I know that this is really quite a day at the legislature. You and Seth Berry are both here in between votes and important items. What is your overall assessment of the session so far, Representative Ouellette? Do you feel as though at the end of the day, it will have made a difference for the people of Maine?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think if you look at the legislation that we've passed, I mean, Mal brought up 40 bills signed by the governor. These are all things that had bipartisan support throughout the process, and the governor signed off on them. So I think we've done a lot of great work. There's a lot of contentious issues still on the table, and we'll see how those fall out over the next couple of days. But I mean, the proof's in the pudding. He signed more than 40 bills throughout the session. I think there's a lot of great things that this legislature has done and will do over the next week or so.
I know that we're not done, as you said, the next week or so, but what do you think is the legacy of this legislative session?
I'm not really sure what the legacy is yet. I think Mal and AJ hit it on the head. I think all the major issues of this legislature have been held to the very last few days. So it will be interesting to see how we decide on these things, how the governor comes down on some of these issues. But I don't think we really have taken up enough of the major issues to really have a legacy yet.
Well, an interesting point is just minutes before we came down here to start this radio program, the House took a very important vote on the Medicaid expansion from the federal government. It was, what, 97 to 51, which means that it passed, but it's not a veto-proof majority, depending who would be in the session, in the legislature the day there's an override vote.
Right, right.
So,
Alex, could you discuss a little bit about some of the background and what's going on in terms of the sort of, I guess, political maneuvering that's going on with the Medicaid expansion issue and the paying back of the hospitals? Currently, as we know, the original proposal that was passed was vetoed by the governor. That bill, currently awaiting how that's going to be dealt with. Eventually, I know Democratic leaders wanted to deal with the issue of Medicaid expansion before they can deal with whether or not we're going to pay back the hospitals. Can you talk about that?
Right, and that's what we did with the previous bill that the governor vetoed. The unfortunate part is I thought we had moved past that. 1066 was one separate bill, and now the Appropriations Committee yesterday voted on the paying the hospitals back. The unfortunate thing is in a newspaper article a week or so ago, Senate President Alphon said that even though they're two separate bills, they're still tied, and we're not going to take action on the hospitals until the Medicaid expansion bill had been taken care of. Now, he didn't really say whether it had to pass or not, so we're hoping that we do have a chance to have an up or down vote. Yesterday in the Appropriations Committee, we saw that by waiting 150 days before the Appropriations Committee even took action on the hospital bill, we have cost the taxpayers of the state of Maine $3 to $4 million extra because interest rates have changed. So by delaying something that's likely a unanimous or close to unanimous support in the legislature, paying the hospitals back, We have cost the taxpayers – not necessarily cost the taxpayers money, but we have definitely not – we're not going to get as big of a bang for our buck when it comes to selling the bonds for paying the hospitals back.
I want to bring somebody else into this conversation. Mayor William Stokes of Augusta is joining us by phone. Mayor Stokes, welcome to Maine Calling. And let me ask you, what are you following closely as you follow what's going on in the legislature this session?
Well, of course, the budget is the key element for us. All of the municipalities and the Mayor's Coalition and Maine Municipal Association obviously are keyed in on the budget and revenue sharing. That's a huge piece. And, of course, it is the only broad-based tax that is shared with the municipalities. Other than that, our funding, our only source of revenue is the property tax. So, you know, obviously we're watching very closely, you know, and to be fair to this administration, this legislature, it's not the only one that has gone after revenue sharing. Certainly that has been rated, you know, for several years now, down from, you know, it was 100 by statute, 140 million by statute. It dropped down to 98 million, and now with this budget, it will be 65 if it's approved, and if the governor, you know, either vetoes it or it's overridden, whatever. If that becomes a reality, it would be 65 million in the first year, and then 60 in the second year. So it's dropped considerably. It means real dollars that the municipalities do not get. Just to give you an idea, under this budget, Augusta will lose $525,000 a year, and that's on top of the $800,000 that we didn't receive from last year's revenue sharing cut. So, you know, that translates into either significant cuts in services that our constituents and our citizens expect and have come to depend upon, or it means passing the cost along in the form of a tax increase.
Alex, I want to bring you in on this. Alex Ouellette, who is one of the Republican leaders in the House. I know that Governor Page, who is in your party, proposed the revenue sharing, but I also know that there are many Republicans who are also frustrated with the idea. Where does your caucus stand on this idea?
I think our caucus we haven't actually right now as we speak. I'm supposed to be caucusing with our caucus to go over the budget.
We haven't
fully broken down the state budget yet as a caucus. It's going on right now. I think one of the unfortunate things is the priorities set forth in the budget. We funded 65 million and then 60 in the second, but we also increased the Maine clean election spending in the same budget. If it was up to me and I was on the Appropriations Committee, that kind of money would have either been put towards not taxing our citizens more or gone into giving more back to the towns. I think the priorities on some of these decisions were a little bit I wouldn't have supported them, but it is what the compromise budget is, so we'll have to go forward and look to see if that gets a two-thirds vote. That's something our caucus is caucusing right now.
You mentioned clean elections, but they also, under the budget, there's no money for gubernatorial races under clean elections anymore, correct?
Right, but under the budget that passed, there's, I think, 500 or 700,000 more going to legislative races. So if we pass this budget, we as a legislature are saying we support spending more on campaign yard signs and radio ads, which is probably good. Well, not good for MPBN, but good for the commercial radios. But I just think that's an unfortunate priority, and I certainly don't support that.
I want to just sort of clarify here for those listeners who maybe don't follow the legislature very closely. What you all are referring to is a compromise budget that the Appropriations Committee came up with about a week ago, and that's what you're referring to here. Mayor Stokes, do you support what you've seen of that compromise budget?
Well, it's hard. The answer is it's hard to like that budget if you're a municipal official. When you see the drop in revenue sharing. So we don't support it.
Support the LePage budget, or you don't support either. The compromise budget?
Either.
Okay.
Either. When it comes to revenue sharing, we obviously were eager to get revenue sharing at least back to the $98 million, which was a significant drop from the $140 million that the statute really requires. So, you know, you can't really feel good about this budget if you're in a service center community like Augusta or Portland or Waterville or Bangor or Lewis and Auburn. We understand that the process is a compromise process. We think more should have been given to restore revenue sharing back to what to the minimum of $98 million. So we understand the process that the legislature is compromised, but our priorities really are making sure that the citizens of our communities are receiving the revenue sharing that they contributed to, frankly.
Mallory.
I sit in on the negotiations on a lot of the budget. And you got to realize the dynamic that's going on here. You're going to have not just Representative Ouellette doesn't like things in there. Representative Berry doesn't like things. Senator Alfond doesn't like things. Senator Goodall doesn't like things. The dynamic around here is not only the governor's input, but the four caucuses. House Republicans may look upon this a little differently than Senate Republicans. The same for Democrats. So all of this mashes together every single time we do a budget every 2 years. And there are things that people don't like. There are things that people like. It's really the mark of a compromise.
All right. Well, Mal Leary, thank you very much. And thank you, Mayor Stokes, for joining us on Maine Calling. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the House Majority Leader joins us, and we will get to your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Just about everyone knows the song Gimme Shelter, but not many people think about who's singing the backup vocal. It's Mary Clayton, one of the backup singers featured in the new documentary about backup singers, 20 Feet from Stardom. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Clayton and the film's director, Morgan Neville. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock.
Slade Cleaves has a new CD called Still Fighting the War. I'm Sarah Willis. Join me tonight on In Tune by 10. New music from Maine's own Slade Cleaves and more here on MPBN Radio.
Our father was a welder down at the Navy Yard. Up on the North Atlantic where the winters come down hard. The union jobs of overtime.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Northeast Delta Dental, administering dental benefits for businesses of all size in Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. Details online at nedelta.com.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the latest news from the state capitol about the budget and proposed legislation. With me in our Augusta studio, A.J. Higgins, who is State House Bureau Chief for MPBN, and Mal Leary, Managing Editor of Maine Capital Connection. Also with us for this segment is Seth Berry, the House Majority Leader. But before we get to him, we have Greg Dugal, who's Executive Director of the Maine Innkeepers Association, on the line with us. Greg, welcome to Maine Calling. And let me ask you, what are you following this legislative session?
Well, thank you, Jennifer. And, of course, that's a loaded question. We're all following a lot of things. We had several bills in. Some worked in our favor and some didn't. But obviously, you know, the budget has been a very big source of angst for us, as it has been for many other people. Obviously, the meals and lodging tax has been of great interest to us, and it still continues to be so.
All right. And you're bringing up the meals and lodging tax because the compromise budget that has come out of the Appropriations Committee proposes a temporary increase in the meals and lodging tax, right?
That's correct.
That's right. So I'll bring Seth Berry into the conversation at this point. Tell me about the rationale behind that.
Sure. Well, first of all, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me. And I am very pleased that there is a bipartisan compromise, unanimous budget out of our Appropriations Committee. It reflects a lot of hard work, a lot of listening, and a willingness to meet in the middle. So we have that before us. It is a responsible alternative, I believe, to the governor's budget. It is definitely not, and I appreciate your statement earlier, Mal, it is definitely not everything that I, Seth Berry, or that my caucus, the House Democratic Caucus, would have liked. There are certainly tax packages, parts of the tax package that do not meet what we had hoped for. Our initial proposal was simply to push for 2 years the page tax cuts, which went into effect in January and really created this budget hole, $400 million in unpaid-for tax cuts, which he proposed to deal with by shifting the property tax to the middle class and to Maine homeowners. And We didn't support that. We felt that the simplest thing was, you know, if you can't afford the car, don't buy the car yet and wait until you have the money for it. So having said that, the compromise was around this the meals and lodging tax going up by a penny for a year, for 2 years, and then sunsetting, and also the half a penny on the sales tax. I think the justification for the meals and lodging tax, again, not my idea particularly, but the justification has been that meals and lodging are in part, and Greg will be quick to agree that there are many Mainers that pay it too, but in part, many non-residents, visitors, pay. And Maine has long been called a cheap date, a state where folks come to visit and enjoy our wonderful quality of life and don't necessarily chip in the way you do and say you go to visit Florida.
Right, right.
So that's really justification. I think it certainly is a way to share the burden. Again, not ideal, but it's a responsible alternative.
And Greg Dougal, what's your response? I mean, it's pretty well known at this point that Maine actually has a very low meals and lodging tax compared to most vacation spots. Do you really believe it will impact your members?
Well, and that's not necessarily true. And I have a great deal of respect for Representative Barry, but we are not a cheap date. And taxes in Maine on state lodging taxes, we have the fifth highest in the country. And if we had some of the meals taxes that were proposed this year, like up to 10%, we would be the highest in the country. So we're a lot higher than people think. What we don't have is local options taxes, and that's the difference. We had many, and as AJ and Mal can attest to, we had several bills in. I mean, the lodging tax could have easily been 19% if everything would have passed. Tax reform suggestions from the Taxation Committee, the Appropriations Committee were 10 and 10. So our job is to try to avert any sort of large increases like we were just talking about.
Greg, when we go someplace like San Francisco, it's not a California lodging tax. It's a San Francisco county that's making us feel as though we're paying a lot more than we are in Maine.
Well, California doesn't have a state lodging tax. They strictly do tax from the county. And yes, in San Francisco, you pay a local options tax, but you also have cable cars and you have trolleys and you have those kinds of infrastructure that those things support. So, I would just say I do understand how difficult this budget is and has been, and I understand that this is a compromise that needed to be reached. We certainly are very happy with the sunset provision in there, and probably more importantly are happier with the implementation date of October 1, because many people in our industry have already sold their lodgings, and, of course, they would have to dig into their own pockets to pay for it if it were not October 1st. And some will still, because October is still a busy month, but I'll take July and August for now.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Greg Dougal from the Maine Innkeepers Association, for joining us here on Maine Calling today.
Thank you for having me. Have a good day.
You too. And if you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number is 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We have a couple emails. One from somebody named Tom. He asks, what is the status of bills related to waiting voting for the governor?
Ranked choice voting?
It's an email, so we can't ask him what he means by that. But
well, I think it's the ranked choice voting. It's still in the process. I don't think we've had final votes in either chamber right now unless it's...
What does that mean, Mel?
That means it's still in play.
No, I mean, what does ranked choice voting mean?
Well, that's a...
For the governor, for how we elect our governor as citizens.
As I understand the legislation, unless it got changed, it's for all elections. It's not just for the governor. So you'd end up with... being able to go in and vote and bullet your vote, so to speak.
My first choice, my second choice, my third choice. Yeah.
Historically, it's back to the future here, because back before the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court ruled, we elected senators in this state by county. And a county like Cumberland might have five senators. And you would get to vote for five people for those five seats. And what you could do is, if you really like Seth Berry and he's there, you just vote for him. So your vote for him is weighed more heavily because he's getting that one vote instead of it being spread across five different people. So that's sort of back to the future for this proposal. Is they want to go back to that kind of process, which on the governor's race, the argument would be we would end up with a majority governor instead of, how many
Someone
minority governors have we had.
Yeah,
I think we've had minority governors since Angus King got reelected.
All right. Well, Seth Berry, I want to ask you one of the questions I asked Alex Ouellette, which is, what do you think the legacy of this legislature will be, acknowledging that we have a couple weeks to go at least?
We do, and there are many bills still to be voted on. But so far, I think there are some great items of good news to report on. One of them, I'm pleased to say, came out of the Joint Select Committee, which I co-chair with Senator Seth Goodall, and it pertains to the skills gap, the fact that over the next 5 years, 4,000 Mainers will go, 4,000 jobs will go unfilled, quality jobs, high-paying jobs, unless we make sure that the worker skills match the skill set needed by the employers. So there's an opportunity there. And we put together an omnibus piece of legislation, had a unanimous report out of our committee, and it's funded in the budget so that we can boost some of the programs at our community colleges. We can create a welcome center in Portland for skilled immigrants who have ways that they can contribute to our economy more. Folks who are have some college experience but maybe need help getting back to school, have a scholarship to do that. There's a whole range of things that are in that bill that will help to boost jobs. Also on the jobs front, the energy bill, another omnibus piece of legislation, almost unanimous out of the Energy and Utilities and Technology Committee. That will help to reduce energy costs both through efficiency and through targeted natural gas investment, and I'm very optimistic about that. I mentioned earlier the holdup of the governor, but I think we can get past that. I hope so. And if we can accept federal dollars to ensure 70,000 Mainers, there will be an enormous accomplishment by this legislature as well, which again pertains to jobs. Hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs will be added by accepting those dollars.
And you're referring to the Medicaid expansion, which the federal government would pay for 100%
for three years,
and then 90%. And that's
it slowly ramps down over time, so it goes down to 90, but over 3 years.
And the vote morning doesn't tell us if it would override a veto. It doesn't look like that.
We are all on the edge of our seats, waiting to see what happens with that. Our hope is that we can do the responsible thing, as many other states, led by both Republicans and Democrats, have done, and accept these dollars, ensure more Mainers, and help our hospitals to address some of their cost issues as well.
A.J. Higgins, let me ask you this. What do you believe is different about this legislative session than others you've covered?
Well, you know, that's it goes right directly to what Seth was just discussing, and that's the uncertainty over where we're heading here as we approach this breaking point over these major issues. Will Republicans hold together as they have been? Just today, we had a veto override attempt fail in the Senate on a bill that had unanimous support in both the House and the Senate, which is sort of a first for in this session in terms of we've had a lot of veto overrides, but not bills that have had unanimous support. So Republicans are sending a message to Democrats saying, you know, we're going to hold on this issues, on these issues that we feel are important to Republicans and our governor. But they do so at their peril to some extent, because a lot of these representatives and senators do not represent what you would refer to as purely Republican or even majority Republican districts. They have to represent the interests of Democrats in those districts, independents in those districts. And so they have those constituencies to deal with, all of which are putting pressure on legislators, which brings me to a question, an issue I wanted to discuss with Seth, which is Democrats and Republicans are feeling a lot of pressure. I know that Governor LePage is calling them in to support his vetoes. We've heard reports that some members of the Republican Party inner circle are letting Republicans know that they don't stand with the governor. They could look at a primary opponent. We've also heard on some progressive groups that are letting Democrats know that they wanted issues such as repeal of the tax cuts that were imposed by the Republican legislature, and support for a bill that you had in that would have raised taxes for wealthier Mainers. They wanted those issues addressed, and that Democrats who don't side with them, they may be looking at a more progressive primary opponent. What kind of impact do those threats have on legislators, Seth? Do they tend to bring them into the fold, or do they just make legislators more determined to say, hey, do what you want to do, I'm going to vote my conscience?
You know, I can't speak for the other side of the aisle. I certainly think that on the Democratic side it has been remarkably cohesive. I'm very proud of my caucus in really being independent-minded. And you know, I tend to ask the folks, let me know how they're going to vote. And, you know, I might try to persuade them. But, you know, we don't twist arms on our side. And I think that's just very important to being able to work together for our districts individually, to vote our conscience and our constituents first and think about the caucus last. I will say that I think we're going to do some great things for working people, and that, you know, the left and I hope all Mainers are pleased with that.
Well, House Majority Leader Seth Berry, thank you so much for joining us on Maine Calling. We're going to take another short break. When we return, we will have more of your comments and questions. Please stay tuned.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, the Common Core, the tough new national curriculum to get America's students back in fighting trim, is here. We'll look at what it is and the debate it's fired. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Tune in for On Point this evening at 11 p.m.
Hello, I'm Linda Hunt. Next time on City Arts and Lectures, our guest is social critic Fran Lebowitz. Considered heir to the crown of Dorothy Parker, Lebowitz is known for her unique perspective on issues such as gender, race, the media, and more. Join me next time for a conversation with Fran Lebowitz on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
And you can tune in for that immediately following Maine Calling this afternoon at 1 o'clock here on MPBN Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today, we're learning about the final days, or might it be weeks, of the current legislative session. With me in our Augusta studio, A.J. Higgins, State House Bureau Chief for MPBN, and Mal Leary, Managing Editor for Maine Capital Connection. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net, post to our Facebook page, or tweet at Maine Calling. Before we ask Mal or AJ any more questions, we're going to turn to another caller. Jim Bennett is City Manager of Presque Isle. Jim, thanks for calling into Maine Calling. I'll ask you what I've asked our other callers. What are you following this session?
Well, I think that the main focus that most of the local government has been following is the revenues coming back to municipalities. You know, we're highly dependent, almost to a parental role, if you want to really think about it. We're totally limited in what we can do based on what our parent, the state, says we can do. And we're, you know, sort of there dealing with whatever they provide for resources and tools for us to try to be able to deliver the services that are so important to local citizens.
Jim, have you crunched numbers? Have you looked at what, if the governor's proposal for the state budget passes, what that would mean to Presque Isle? And then also if the compromise budget that was put out by the Appropriations Committee comes to pass, if that becomes law, what that would mean for Presque Isle?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're one of the few communities left in Maine that still operate on a calendar year. So we already adopted our budget back in November and December. And the budget the council voted on was the fourth year in a row without an increase. This council has worked very hard to try to limit things. And, you know, on about an $11 million operating budget, we've taken out over $1 million worth of payroll and benefits without really impacting services over those 3 years in order to deal with the reductions we've had to date. Traditionally, if we were at the 5%, which is the, you know, the amount that over the last three decades, the compact between the state and municipalities was funded, we'd be up in the $1.8, $1.9 million range. What we've been getting is around 1.2 over the last 4 years with the raids that have occurred. And this latest proposal that we would end up having to deal with would be another 400 in the first year and 450,000 in the second year. Now, these numbers are going to get lost on people. I think the easiest way to be able to take a look at it is every time we spend $530,000, it costs a dollar on the tax rate. So we're talking very significant amounts of impact on our local businesses and our local citizens.
All right. Well, Jim Bennett, City Manager of Presque Isle, thank you so much for joining us for Maine Calling.
Oh, no problem.
We're going to take a call from Dick in Southwest Harbor. Dick, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling, and thanks for waiting.
Hi. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I'm calling basically with reference to LD 942, which is the transportation bond bill that's being heard by the Transportation Committee. And I'm calling basically on behalf of a large number of people around Penobscot Bay who participated in the battle against the liquefied petroleum gas tank that was proposed there and now are being faced with dredging of Penobscot Bay, for which there is money included in this bill. It's not specifically indicated how much, other than that there's about, I think, about $9.5 million for port facilities in general. There's a proposal to dredge the area around Mack Point Searsport, which is one of the three main ports, for maintenance to make it get rid of the silt that settled since the last time they did this, and another proposal to completely change the bottom to make it much deeper. And the problem is that the dredging that takes in the much deeper sediments, there's a potential for a lot of contamination there over the years. And all this is going to be dumped in Penobscot Bay. So the lobstering.
What's your question?
The question is does anybody know what the source of the requests for moving some money out of other transportation things that are needed to increase the possibility of doing this dredging?
AJ Mal, is this an issue you've been covering?
I haven't heard anything about this at this time.
Well, there hasn't been a public hearing on this yet. It's going to happen today. It's really not before the Transportation Committee because the transportation portion you're talking about is general fund money, not transportation fund money. That's part of the 32 bills, bonding bills, that are before the Appropriations Committee today. So a lot of what you're talking about will, I think, be discussed today as they take up that bond issue.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Dick. Going now to another call. This is Harold at Cross Lake. Harold, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes. I listened this morning on the Voice of Maine. A gentleman, I'm not 100% certain of this, but I believe he said that he was the head of the Senate in the state of Maine. And he represented that through bipartisan negotiations and everything in Augusta, that the legislature had accomplished avoiding the single largest tax increase in the state of Maine in our history. And my question is this true?
Well, that goes to how you define tax increase in the state of Maine. I believe you're talking about the Senate president would be Justin Alfond. And I did not hear this call-in program that you're referencing. But the reality is, in the governor's proposed budget, one of the things that we've heard municipal officials talk about all through this program, and they certainly have testified about, is the shift to the property tax that would occur. And it would be a very large tax increase were indeed municipalities simply to pass that on to property taxpayers. So I think that's what was being referenced in your comment.
Yeah, in the budget under revenue sharing, this budget turns back $125 million towards offsetting the $200 million in revenue sharing suspension payments that were proposed by the governor in his budget. So that's a significant number. It also puts in some additional money for education and has a provision to bring Maine 1% closer to the 55% of local education funding in the second half of the two-year budget cycle.
And this is the compromise budget you're
Correct.
Talking about. All right. Thank you so much for your call, Air Harold. Going now to Greg in Kennebunk. Greg, go ahead.
Yes. I have a question about rumors to cut in Maine Care and the volunteer driver program and a private company coming in?
This is something we have some puzzled looks here. What did you hear?
I heard that a private company was coming in to manage all the volunteer drivers for the state.
Okay. What you're talking about isn't something before the legislature. It's in rulemaking under the Maine Care program by the department. And there have been some ongoing issues about the non-emergency transportation needs of folks on Maine Care that's been discussed now for several years. And I think what you're referring to is that which is under discussion for rulemaking. And I don't think a decision has been made. I think it's just being discussed.
Okay. Well, thank you for your call, Greg. You know, we're having this discussion just days before the statutory adjournment of the legislature. But I want, AJ and Mel, your prediction on when the legislature will actually adjourn this session. No, you're on the radio. Oh. You can't just shake your head.
I'm going to go out on a limb and... Oops. And I'm going to, I think the way I'm seeing it right now, unless things change dramatically, I think we're heading towards a fairly dramatic conclusion of this session. And although things could change in the next couple of weeks, you're right, the statutory date of adjournment is June 19th. I don't think there's any chance you're going to see that. I am inclined to think that we could very well be in position for a state shutdown if these two sides cannot get together on this hospital repayment issue and Medicaid expansion. Democrats are drawing a line in the sand over Medicaid expansion. The governor is drawing a line in the sand over repaying the hospitals. And it's going to come down to a handful of people, mostly Republicans, I think it's approximately 10 Republicans that may be needed, depending on who's present when the veto override attempt comes in the House, and I believe it's 5 in the Senate.
Mel?
I think it'll go to the last weekend of the month. A lot of what AJ is saying could play out. I think you do have a bipartisan agreement on the budget. That's the question of a shutdown. I mean, we could pass the budget and still not have Medicaid resolved and these other issues resolved, but we would avoid a shutdown of government. So the session might continue for a few days into July, but it wouldn't be with a shutdown. So I'm hopeful that they're able to finally enact a budget and that we avoid that. Having covered the past shutdown of government in 91, it is not a pleasant thing.
Well, A.J. Higgins, Mal Leary, thank you all for joining us today. A.J. Higgins, State House Bureau Chief for MPBN, Mal Leary, Managing Editor for Maine Capital Connection. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer, Lucas Randall Owens, answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board, and we had help from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our podcast, by visiting mpbn.net/mainecalling. Tomorrow on the program, there is a big beer festival coming to Maine in a couple weeks. We'll get a preview from one of its organizers and hear from Maine brewers and bartenders about the latest trends in craft beers. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.